Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
As promised, he has returned, the third part of the trilogy, yes. And there'll be more, I'm sure, but it has connected. We've had one or two challenges connecting Denmark with the UK, and don't get me started on New York, but the great news is the legend that is Don Powell is back with us. How are you, Don?
I'm pretty good, Alex. The last we made contact, I mean, yeah, technology, eh? I mean, you just never know.
It is strange because, as I say, we were in the Zoom area, so to speak, waiting for you to come on board. I thought, no. So we did a few other things. We filled for about 15, 20 minutes. Thought, well, obviously, something's cropped up in Denmark. But here you are. You're back with us. And that's the important thing.
I was pressing buttons and trying to find out where you were. But at least we're here now.
Exactly. Thank goodness for email. At least we managed to connect on that system. Yeah. So good news there. Okay. Let's cut to the quick, basically, Don. Festive period. We talked about, obviously, Merry Christmas, everybody, but I'm going to turn it around slightly now. Do you have any other particular festive tunes and melodies that you particularly like that you kind of thought, actually, you know, I always quite liked I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas or indeed Winter Wonderland or whatever?
Actually, in 1973, Alex, when Slade's Merry Christmas, Everybody was released, there was a lot of Christmas records that particular year. There was like Roy Wood, Greg Lake, Elton John, lots of people. I particularly liked the Roy Wood version, but I don't know how much he meant to the in the States or whatever, you see. So,
quickly cover up your head. Don't you lock the door?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose really when we were recording, I was in New York, as you know, when we weren't sure about releasing it. But I mean, but there you go, it came out, and actually, that's all we've been hearing on the radio over here ever since, you know. So no, it's fantastic, really. I mean, who would have thought, you know, after all these years, it's still there. But like I said, it's like every Christmas record, really, that they're just going to flood the airwaves of Christmas.
Well, this is true, of course, and even more than that, you'll be pleased to know that on a recent episode of Doctor Who that we actually reviewed again, the Christmas Invasion, it's also featured there in the garage with Mickey. We got Slade and Merry Christmas, everybody. So hopefully the BBC have continued to pay the royalties.
I never knew that. Well, that's a new one to me, Alex. I never heard of that one before. I know it was being played on Coronation Street and quite a few other the TV programs around this time of year. But yeah,
Well,
there
you
you
can
go. I
also,
mean, you should have.
you can
No, it's all
check
right.
out
You can
the,
carry on.
now you can check out the David Tennant, the first episode of David Tennant, series 2, episode 0, The Christmas Invasion, and just about 5 or 10 minutes in, you've got Slade and Merry Christmas, Everybody, being played on the radio. So there we are.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, and it's just unbelievable. I mean, I think I told you the story when I was in the supermarket, and I was waiting at the checkout, and the girl was singing it to the top of her head, and I was just standing there, sort of like twiddling my thumbs, and then she looked up at me and just went blood red and hid sort of thing. And it's, I think I told her the story when I was in the elevator. I was on tour in the UK, and it was 1973, the year it was released. And I was in the elevator of this hotel going down to the ground floor. The lift was packed, and I was standing at the front by the front door with Merry Christmas playing in the lift. And heard this guy behind me say, "I'm so fed up with this record." And I turned around and faced him. He didn't know where to look, he didn't know what to do with himself.
It still stands up, Don. I mean, that's the
Oh,
important thing. It stands the
it's
test of time.
incredible. Yeah, it's incredible, mate.
Now, you mentioned Wizard there, obviously Roy Wood, who was also part of the Electric Light Orchestra and so on. We've talked about, obviously, your fondness for the Beatles and Ringo Starr and so on. What sort of are your, if we were to ask your top five records and tunes, etc., from that era or indeed earlier, that you think actually this is, I mean, we featured obviously Sammy Davis Jr. on part two, but are there any other sort of areas and classics that you thought, yeah, go with that?
Well, lots really. I mean, I've got an open mind as far as music goes, Alex. I mean, there's lots of sort of genres that I'm into. You know, I don't sort of stipulate any particular genre. There's lots of things. Like I said, Sammy Davis Jr., all that kind of thing. I mean, Johnny Mathis, you know, there's quite a few things from that particular genre that I actually do like, and I still listen to at home, actually.
I mean, again, I think it's interesting how I was looking at a documentary recently about David Bowie, and clearly he also transcended a lot of the glam rock era and so on. Did you ever encounter the Thin White Duke in your musical excursions?
Not really. I went to a few of his concerts, Alex, but he was one of those guys that as soon as he came off stage, he was straight into the car and gone. You know, he was never backstage. He never mixed. He was never at the bar. He was never at the bar with a pint, as you can imagine, sort of thing. He was, like I said, he was straight off stage into the car and gone.
And let's talk a little bit about the notion of that particular period, which I thought was, I mean, we can see it now on YouTube. We can see the joys of glam rock and Top of the Pops and the whole aspects within that whole field. I mean, actually, this could be before that. Is there something in the water in Wolverhampton that basically has given birth to Slade, Moody Blues, Electric Light Orchestra? I mean, there are three very powerful bands that have come out of the Midlands. I was just wondering, was it just something where there was a thing that was happening, a bit like the Merseybeat, but for the Midlands?
I don't really know, because there was like Black Sabbath as well, like you said, ELO, Roy Wood. I mean, It was incredible, really, wasn't it? Because we used to play all the pubs and clubs together way back when, and it was sort of, we never thought of being successful then. We were just having, it was a great atmosphere. There's no egos around then, and we just had a great time working together. And it was all of a sudden, the mood, I think the Moody Blues were first, and then became the Move, or Black Sabbath, the Move, and like Electric Light Orchestra and ourselves, sort of thing. So I don't know. Someone's asked me this question before, Alex, and I really don't know an answer to it. I mean, you say you got the Merseybeat, the Liverpool situation back in the 60s, which I thought was incredible. And yeah, it's weird. It's a strange question, that one, Alex.
Well, we like to occasionally ask the strange questions. It sort of works
Yeah,
on
it
its own
is.
premise.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to your life as an author and lines with respect to that, because obviously this is a classic text. It's just sort of cropped up behind me in terms of Don
Yeah,
Power,
I've
Look What
seen.
I've Done.
Yeah.
Are there any plans for a sequel to that, or is it a case of no, that's it, it's all there, get the book?
I think that's it. I think that I don't. There's nothing else I can add to that, Alex. I mean, Lisa Falkenberg, who wrote the book for me, and she mentioned about it, but we spoke about it before because she had all my diaries to get all the research together, and I don't think there's anything else we can really add, Alex. I mean, I've written a children's book which is just about released on Amazon, but that's nothing to do with, like, that's just a fairy story.
Well, come on, Don,
There's
you can't
nothing.
just tease us like that. Share with us. What's the fairy story
Well,
about?
it's called The Adventures of Bibble Brick. I mean, I wrote it in the 60s, actually, Alex, and it's taken all this time before you get it released. I offered it to a few people in the early 70s, but they didn't really want to know. And it was Lisa, like I said, who wrote the Look What You Did, Look What I Done, the biography. And she contacted Amazon, and they were off for it straight away. And it's out there now.
Well, it makes perfect sense. And any chance of some cross-media approach? I mean, can we see an animated version of this exciting thing?
I mean, that would be fantastic. I mean, the guy who did the drawings, I mean, he did a great job. And it could lend itself to an animation, Alex. It really could, So let's see.
I'm just thinking, so I know that Pamela, who we will get you together. It's the last thing we do with respect to New York and Denmark. But I know Pamela's a key musician, as indeed is her husband, Jerry Leonard. So maybe they could actually do some of the music, some of the soundtrack for you. I'm just saying.
Oh, that would be good. We can work together on that because I did write some lyrics. I've got some lyrics to some of the songs. Maybe we could all get together on that one, Alex.
Well, I think so. And in fact, I
Yeah.
shall make sure you're again e-introduced, and we'll move on that sort of side of things. Okay,
Okay.
let's move on to, again, I was talking about Top of the Pops. My first experience of Top of the Pops was probably 1980, when I was actually my first interviewee was actually Sue from the dance group Legs and Co. And Sue had obviously been with Pan's people beforehand, and she connected obviously from that point of view. We still connect with Sue to a certain extent, and indeed Rosie from the group today. When you were actually on the show from that point of view, was it just a case of you went in, you did your sh you did your gig, you mimed to the production, etc., or were there moments where that whole sense of glamour, which really started in the late 60s and went all the way through until its demise, really, in the 90s, really,
Yes.
when it became, it was Top of the Pops an essential aspect for a young musician growing up that you say, yeah, this is important.
And important. I mean, around those years, like you say, Alex, 60s and 70s, it was the program, the main plug, if you like. There was no other. There's a program called the Old Grey Whistle Test, but that was
Whispering Bob
more connect.
Harris.
Sorry.
Whispering Bob Harris.
That's it. I'm gonna No, with Top of the Pops, Alex, it's like it was the program at the time. And when you think it was only a 30-minute show, and they basically played the charts went down, and they just have one slot, the new release slot, and it was like a challenge to get that spot, and luckily we got it the first time we got it, and it worked for us, and then we started getting the hit records after that, and then we were booked every time then for the show they actually started calling us the resident band at top
Well,
of the pop.
that was what I was going to say, because you were obviously on that, and my question really was, of all the Slade numbers, which one would you, had you not been available and not been able to turn up that week, and because obviously this is the way Flick Colby used to work with Pan's people and Legs and Co. Basically, they used to do interpretative dances to musicians or numbers where they couldn't get the video or they weren't actually there. Which Slade number would you most have liked either Pan's people or Legs and Co. to have actually danced to or put together a number?
I think maybe sort of either Come On, Feel the Noise or Mama, We're All Crazy Now.
Baby, baby, baby!
I'm sorry.
I'd like to have seen them dance to that, you know, sort of thing. But yeah, because I'm actually one of Pants people came from Wolverhampton, our hometown. But she'd left Wolverhampton many, many years before we knew, sort of thing. And yeah, I mean, it was great fun. I mean, sort of, well, I mean, the first rehearsals was 10 o'clock. It was always recorded the day before. It was shown on a Thursday night, but it was recorded on a Wednesday. And the first rehearsal was 10 o'clock Wednesday morning. And a lot of the time we would drive down from Wolverhampton that morning. If we had the 10 o'clock slot, we would like leave about 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning to be there. And you were never, ever late for that program because it was the one. And then we do rehearsal, at least do 2 or 3 run-throughs, mainly for the camera. And that would be it till 3 o'clock in the afternoon when there'd be a full dress rehearsal. And then it would be, the show would be recorded about 7 o'clock at night with the audience, you know. But it was so well and truly put together. It happened so good. It was so quick the way it all happened. It was, well, it was tried and tested, Alex, if you know what I mean, sort of thing. So, I mean, nobody was ever late for that programme. Everybody was there because it was the program.
Yeah. I mean, you're right, because I recall, I think Robin Nash was the producer. That's who effectively was responsible.
Well, before him, there's a guy named Johnny Stewart, who was doing the program before Robin. But Robin was great to us. It was really, really good to us. Robin was.
I always felt with Robin Nash, actually, I thought maybe it was something to do with the name Robin, actually. He had a wonderful bow tie he used to wear regularly, and so did Robin Day. He always used to wear a bow tie as well.
All the time with a pinstripe shirt and a bow tie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Every week, when we did Top of the Pops, Alex, he was there, like you say, in his striped shirt and bow tie. And he'd come down the studio, say if we were on the 10 o'clock slot, he'd come down just to say hello and welcome to the show. And he did that for every artist on the show, which was great.
And it was at the period of the BBC, I think, that actually they did certainly care very much about the whole process. I'm not saying they don't care now, of course, but in terms of, I think Michael Hurl took over from Robin Nash as producer, and he was less kind of connected with the whole thing, I felt, or at least he had his own vision of the 80s as being a kind of dance party, etc., which is a different line.
I think that as well, actually, what it was, he felt it needed a change, I suppose, every 10 years, right from the 60s, then the 70s. And then you say the 80s, it was more a thing about the clothes that the audience were wearing, things like that, you know, the glamour thing. I don't know, but
interesting times, but certainly. But I will actually, I'll put that to Rosie next time I speak to her, that Ma Mama We're All Crazy Now, or indeed Come On Feel the Noise.
Stop!
Because I'm sure, you know, for those folk who are still actually around, I'm sure the gals should get together and actually produce a kind of Golden Girls version of a routine to Slade.
We've met one since, because there's a group called Sailor. I don't know whether you know an English band called Sailor. Well, now the keyboard player, he actually goes out with one of Pan's people, was married to her, Dee Dee. I think she came later. She wasn't the very original Pan's people, but we often reminisce about the Top of the Pops days. You know, what was great for us anyway was there was a great canteen at top of the BBC studios, and you could get fantastic food for nothing, for pennies. You know, we used to love it up there.
And it was all taking place in what I referred to as the concrete donut, basically. I think that was the television centre.
That was it. You always got there was always the bar afterwards, after Top of the Pops, the show had been recorded. And it was great, the doorman. It was like a fight to get into the bar. As soon as you bought them a pint, they would let you in.
It's, as I say, always important to actually be positive to the door people, because otherwise you don't know where things could actually go on that sort of basis.
That was exactly it, Alex.
Subtly done, but very important. We've talked, Don, obviously, about your current incarnation and some of the fabulous things that you're doing with Don and the Dreamers. What hopes do you have for 2023 as far as Don and the Dreamers are actually concerned? Will there be a tour? Will there be sort of other aspects coming across?
Well, we don't know yet. I mean, we're having a big press launch about March when we're releasing the CD. That's all finished and everything. And we have a new single coming out on Jan the 6th. It's the cover of the classic Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood. And we're releasing that on Jan the 6th. And the album, It's Never Too Late to Be a Rock Star, is released on March the 3rd. You know, so we're planning, you know, to do a nice press launch in London with that.
Well, who knows? Maybe we can actually come and join you actually at the venue. That would be exciting, but still, we'll put it out there.
We'll keep in touch. I can let you know where the launch is going to be held. And then we can sort of have a cup of tea together or something.
Exactly so. I mean, that Don, is true rock and roll. Have a cup of tea and some biscuits all the way.
Don't push it. But I stopped drinking many, many years ago. And I'm a cup of tea man with chocolate biscuits now, sort of thing. But yeah.
I mean, I've got to ask the question, Don. Are you a proper tea person, or are you a herbal tea person? Do you prefer minced tea?
No, real tea, Alex. Real tea. I can't handle any of this fruit stuff or whatever it is. I don't know. I just want a real cup of tea.
and just digging down a little bit deeper, because this could be critical, obviously, to the 21st century fandom. Is that Yorkshire tea or is it Tetley's?
Both, really. But I prefer Tetley's, but don't have any particular favourites. But like I said, I don't like the fruit teas and stuff like that. I just like a real copper.
I mean, the thing that's always confused me, just out of interest, is the white tea, which to me is just boiling water, but it's called white tea. It's supposed to be very helpful,
I don't know. I've never tried that one, Alex. So I don't think I will. Like you said, you might as well drink hot water.
Yeah. It's just a way forward in terms of health kicks, etc. Let's talk your line in Denmark, of course. Lots of great things happening with respect to that. Did you follow Denmark in the World Cup at all, or was it a case of no? You just sort of stepped away from that.
They didn't last so long, did they? It was the same as the England team. I've been watching the World Cup, sort of thing. I mean, what I thought was great is a lot of the underdogs were coming through, when the big ones like Germany, people like that, were being knocked out pretty early, and these so called underlings were coming through. And I thought
Saudi Arabia, Morocco,
Japan. I watched the final. I mean, sort of a lot of these countries which I never realised that they're like America, the States. They were never known as a soccer continent before, you know. But I thought they did really well.
Well, they continued their unbeaten record against England. They've yet to actually lose to England in any of the World Cup games, even going all the way back to when they actually beat England back in the 1950s. So there you go. It just goes to show. Yeah. Did you watch the final, though, Don? Was it the greatest of all time?
Yes, I did. We watched the runner up, third place, which I thought was a great game. And no, we definitely watched the final. But I'm sorry, Alex. I really don't like the end where it's all down to goal scoring. I really don't like that. I mean,
Penalties.
I wish they would just let them play till someone scored. Okay, they got
Yeah.
them like 15 minutes either way, and then it's down to sort of the goals thing. But I really don't mind that because I don't think that's a fair judgment of the quality of the team, if you like. It's between just two guys, with the goalie and whoever's kicking the ball. I really wish they would just let them play till at least someone scored a goal, and that'd be the thing then. But
Well,
ours is not a reason why.
yeah, absolutely. Exactly. I mean, FIFA have their own things on this, and they will obviously love to do that. Just out of interest, are you a Wolverhampton Wanderers fan, or were you Birmingham City or Aston Villa?
I was when I was there because I remember sort of when we used to, back when we first started, Alex, we used to play the pubs and clubs, but always on Sunday night, we used to play this place called the Connaught Hotel, and most of the Wolverhampton players were in there, so the gig, sort of thing. So, yeah, we got to know, and I remember traveling on the train once from London back to Wolverhampton with Derek Dougan, if you remember that name. Yeah, and he was such a nice guy, but no, it was no, it's
In fact,
a lot of good memories there.
yeah, Derek Dougan, of course, one of the first ITV panelists. He used to be seen on television with Brian Moore, of course, Paddy Crair, and indeed
That's
Malcolm
it, that's
Allison,
it.
who I met a few times,
Yeah.
basically, in terms of his lines. So,
Okay. Well, I must tell you this, it was many years ago in Czech Republic, we did a big concert in Prague. On the football stadium in Prague, and when they cleared the concert, there was a big like a friendly game between Brazil and Czech Republic, and obviously we could stay and watch that game. And these Brazilian players, it's just unbelievable. And I remember talking to some of the Brazilian hierarchy at the reception afterwards, and I was sort of saying, well, it's always like the Brazil and all the Latin countries that have these incredible players. And this guy was telling me, he says, well, because they have the money, he said their scouts are out all the time just watching young kids play to see any potential there. So if they see someone, they take him under the wing straight away, and the family, they rehouse them, and they put the young protege through school, but they're getting him ready for the national team. He's training with the rest of the guys. He said because they have the money. Football is it's the biggest thing ever, in countries like that. And like you said, they have the money, they can afford to do it.
I do recall actually back in 1973, from that point of view, that actually well into 1974, and there was a time I thought actually it was into February where Slade was still at number one with Merry Christmas, Everybody. So on that basis alone, I think we're perfectly entitled to actually put this program out immediately after Christmas Day, which is fine. So would you like to formally introduce yourself and the rest of the boys, of course, Jimmy Lee, Dave Hill, and Noddy Holder,
Yeah.
with Merry Christmas, Everybody. Over to you, Don.
Okay, this is Don Powell here speaking on behalf of Noddy Holder, Jim Lee, and Dave Hill. Have a listen to Merry Christmas, everybody.
It is the winter, and you may well be sick and tired of transport issues and a whole variety of bits and pieces. Actually, that's it. I'm going to actually use my car solely. Okay, if that is the case, clearly you've got a situation in terms of making sure that your weather scenarios are observed and that effectively you are driving safely. So to actually talk us through the importance of ensuring that safety is at the heart of the whole system, and to look at a report conducted by the Centre for Automotive Industry Research at Cardiff University, we're delighted to welcome motoring journalist extraordinaire and, of course, author Maria McCarthy. How are you, Maria?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. So clearly this is something which one would hope is self-evident, that if you are actually going to be doing any journeys via car, you'll check that your vehicle is roadworthy, etc. And especially you'll check your tyre treads. I mean, explain to us once again the importance of why this is so essential for driving.
Well, I've been looking at some research carried out by Professor Peter Wells at the Centre for Automotive Industry Research in Cardiff. And he carried out a report commissioned by Halfords, which for the first time compared the effect of worn tyres on stopping distance with the effect of someone having drunk alcohol. Now, this study focused on driving in wet, wintry conditions, just like the ones we've got at the moment. And it discovered that if you compare stopping distances when the driver is under the influence of alcohol with driving with tyres at the legal minimum of 1.6 millimetres and so like tyres with a good tread of 4 millimetres, then the stopping distance is 7 times greater with the worn tyres. So, you know, that's a really significant, you know, distance. And, you know, it can be like, you know, up to an additional 89 feet, you know, which could cause a really serious accident. So I think it's important for all of us to, you know, check our tyres regularly. And to just give you, you know, a bit of tyre trivia, tyres start off with about 8 millimetres of tread, and the legal minimum is 1.6 millimetres. Now, you know, which is what's covered in the study. Now, this limit was set in 1986, and I think we'll agree that we've all moved on a bit since 1986 in terms of, you know, what we require from health and safety. So, you know, I do think it might be time to review, you know, this 1.6 millimetre, because although it is legal, I think the study indicates that, you know, it's not necessarily safe. And, you know, we do need a deeper tread than that. So when you check your tyres, I think it can be a good idea to use a digital checker, because that will actually give you a number of where your tyre is at in terms of tread depth. And then you can make a decision about, you know, does it need to be changed? You know, when might it need to be changed in the future and so forth?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the key thing is obviously checking and making sure that you do those particular checks, especially if you're going to do it for a long journey. I mean, we're clearly into the season where a number of people will be taking long journeys. So that finding, as you said, 1.6 millimetres of tread is the sort of, you should be saying, oh, it's 1.7 millimetres. We're fine on that basis. You do need to be very much aware of how things are developed. And presumably also, Maria, if people are feeling uncertain, they should actually go to a registered automotive dealer, possibly like Halfords, that they can actually check your tyre as are okay and legit as well.
Exactly. I mean, I think we all grew up, you know, and there's this idea that, you know, you have to, like, you know, check all your, you know, your tyres and your fluids and, you know, your lights and so forth every week. And there are people out there who do it, and that's fantastic. But a lot of people, you know, they perhaps don't feel confident, and, you know, perhaps they never learned how to do it officially. So it can be good to, you know, go somewhere, you know, where people are, you know, experienced and will, like, you know, just check them for you and put your mind at rest. And if you'd like to do that, you can sign up to the Halfords Motoring Club for free. And then you get a £10 discount on MOTs, as well as getting your tyres checked as part of a free 10-point car check, you know, just for signing up. And if it's just the free tyre check you're after, then you can have that anytime, you know, without any sign-ups at Halfords or any National Tyres or Auto Care garage. Because when you check your tyres, it's like you don't need to just check them in one place. You need to, like, check them in different locations around the circumference of the tyre. You know, so it does involve a certain amount of, like, you know, rubbing around on the floor, you know, with your little, you know, tyre tread depth, you know, gauge. sort of like seeing if it's all present and correct, as it were. And at the same time, you can do things like check for damage and so forth, which is important, because people say that you can like check the tread depth with a 20 pence piece, and if the tread depth is like de covers the rim of the 20 pence piece, then you're fine. But I actually don't like that. I would rather, because I'm a bit of a nerd, have an actual number, from either an analog or a digital tire tread depth checker. That's what I do. But I think, as I say, not everybody is like a motoring nerd like me, and they would just prefer to think go to somebody qualified, like a Halford centre, and have a technician do it, and just basically sort of say, take this problem away, please check all these things for me.
Absolutely. It's called, I think, delegation or something along those sort of lines. But we'll just have to work with that. Are you traveling far yourself over the festive period, Maria, or is it a case of no? I do, after motoring over the year, I'm going to stay in one place.
No, I'm going to stay in one place. But I do think for those people who are travelling long distances, be aware of the fact that for a lot of people, this is the only long distance trip they might do all year. So lots of people, I think, they just drive locally, here, there, and everywhere, at school, work, or whatever. And it's quite rare for them to do a long distance trip. So around about Christmas, there are a lot of inexperienced motorists on the road, I think. People aren't, and so if you're somebody who is confident doing those long journeys, then cut a bit of slack for the people who sort of aren't and might seem a bit hesitant or a bit unfamiliar with the motorway or everything. Stay in the festive spirit.
Absolutely. Be kind. That's the important thing. And I
Yeah.
speak as somebody who usually clocks up about 26,000 miles a year. So that is important. It's well to bear in mind. Maria McCarthy, you've already given the details in terms of going to Halfords to find out more details about the research, etc. How can people actually follow your good self on social media and such like?
Oh, I'm Maria McCarthy 11 on Twitter. So, it'd be lovely to connect with people.
Fantastic stuff. Maria McCarthy, motoring journalist extraordinaire and, of course, author. Huge thanks and have a great festive season, Maria.
And you, thank you.
So, have you often been confused with respect to lyrics and the kind of festive song lyrics that you might be listening to? And you sort of think, well, maybe it's a case of not deck the halls with bras of holly. It's something completely different, or indeed bells on cocktail rings. No, let's not go there. I mean, apart from around John Virgin, Mother and Child. Let's talk to an audiologist at Boots Hearing Care, who clearly has got a whole range of things with respect to why 12 Days of Christmas and Silent Night are the most misheard Christmas carols. We say welcome to Faraz Ashraf. How are you, Faraz?
Hi, I'm really well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on your show, Alex.
Well, it's great to hear you. And it's surprising, actually, one in six of the UK adult population is actually living with a hearing loss. So it does mean that we're not necessarily picking up the real meaning of what's being said.
Do you know what? Look, it's quite normal. I mean, we're all guilty of belting out the wrong song lyrics. It's actually a phenomenon called Mondegreen, and when you talk about those that have a hearing loss, as you said, one in six adults in the UK currently have a hearing loss. That's around 6.7 million people, out of which only 2 million are, using a hearing aid. So when you look at untreated hearing loss, it can be debilitating, not only for you not being able to hear speech, but sounds in general. I can give you a quick short story. I recently fitted a customer with some hearing aids, and when I turned the hearing aids on, the first thing she mentioned was that I can hear this noise coming through my nose. And for a moment I paused and then realized she was actually talking about hearing herself breathing through her nose, and she was in her 90s and may have not been able to hear for however long, but had actually forgotten that you can hear yourself breathe through your nose.
I mean, that's astounding, just the whole notion. I mean, obviously, you want to be grateful that people can actually hear themselves breathe, although obviously it's an autonomic nervous reflex that we hopefully will continue for many years. I was intrigued to find, actually, that if we talk about 12 Days of Christmas, that on the fourth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me not four calling birds, but four collie birds. You see, I mean, in terms of that, is it just a case of sometimes we mishear because it's hearing loss, or is it just a case of, again, we just stop picking up the spectrum of audio sounds that are vibrating through the ether and then passing into our inner ear and so on?
look, sometimes, I mean, our brain is a wondrous thing, right? It will substitute words for other words that it thinks that make more sense. You know, I've certainly grown up singing the 12 Days of Christmas song. And, you know, my confession here is that I've been singing three French pens instead of three French hens. So it's quite a normal thing for us to substitute words in sound, song lyrics for other words. But when you've got a hearing loss, there is a scientific reason behind it. And when you look at measuring someone's hearing ability, if they've got a frequency-specific hearing loss, so for example, if they can't hear any sounds beginning with F, if they're hearing festive, they're not hearing festive, they're hearing estive. So that's why someone with a hearing loss might substitute a word for a different word.
If people are listening to this, no pun intended, and they're obviously hearing the right words that we're actually saying, from that perspective of mishearing lyrics, would you recommend that the service that obviously Boots Hearing Care can provide is worthwhile, just checking that everything is okay and having a trained audiologist such as yourself actually is the way to confirm that actually you will at least not necessarily be worried about mishearing, but you might get it sorted as well?
Of course. Look, there's no doubt in it. Like, almost half the people who we surveyed said that they'd be reluctant to wear a hearing aid. This really highlights the stigma that still is attached to wearing them. Now, hearing aids have really come on. They're super high tech. They can make listening effortless. They're easy to use. They're rechargeable, waterproof. They even have Bluetooth technology. So, you know, you'll never mishear a Christmas carol or a song lyric if you're wearing a hearing aid. But, you know, look, on a serious note, if you think you've got a hearing problem or are noticing that a loved one is withdrawing from a conversation, they're changing positions so that they can hear from a better ear, or using the common excuses like background noise or someone else is mumbling or the other person is speaking too quietly, I would highly recommend that you book an appointment with your local audiologist at Boots Hearing Care. And I'm really certain that you'll be amazed at how this can change your life.
And notice, Faraz, that you also travel the world with the Hear the World Foundation, and not to be confused with Heal the World, although you could have actually misheard it and thought it was Heal the World, not Hear the World.
Yes, I do. So the Hear the World Foundation is a charity that fits children with hearing aids across the world. And I'm very close to a project in Guatemala. Guatemala has a population of 16 million people, but there's only one audiologist serving that population. And on the trips that I've made there, we've increased the population of audiologists by, you know, 500-600%, because there's a group of us that have gone out there and fitted these children with hearing aids that have been donated, you know, done wax removal. And it's just so rewarding when you go out and you see that direct impact that you can make.
And do you have any favorite festive songs yourself, Faraz, which you've often thought, were they really saying that?
It's funny you say that. Mine is "We Wish You a Merry Christmas," and I don't know why, but I keep hearing piggy puddings instead of figgy puddings.
Ah, yes, the old piggy pudding. very interesting. You know, it is a case of figgy pudding, absolutely critical. Yeah. Faraz, where can people go to find out further details about Boots Hearing Care and the kind of things we've been talking about today?
Right, it's really easy. All you do is go onto our website. It's www.bootshearingcare.com and get yourself a hearing test booked.
Faraz Ashraf, audiologist extraordinaire from Boots Hearing Care, huge thanks, and good luck obviously with your Guatemala project and so on. Keep on keeping on and have a great holiday season.
Thank you so much, Alex. Have a good festive period to you too.